morning. Today's Daf Mechoros is Yud Ches. We are in Yud Zayin. Finishing up the sugya from yesterday, and then starting the Mishnah on the bottom of the Amud. We're going to be starting our primary topic for today is going to be Efshel Samsem. Say discussion, so one of those Shas discussions. Today's the Daf. Today's the main Daf of Efshel Samsem, which is coming up in just a little bit. But just before that, obviously, the completion of a sugya. In the Gemara yesterday, so we had more discussions about business arrangements, financial arrangements that are made between a Jew and non-Jew, which would give enough non-Jew a financial interest in the animal, which would create an exemption from the Bechor. And so yesterday we talked about consignment and some sort of capital venture that's created between a Jew and a non-Jew. And as long as those animals are just simply secured against an obligation, and that obligation is for a non-Jew, so that's enough of an interest, and that was our big discussion yesterday. We turned our attention yesterday to the topic of Nidmeh. Once again, mutation. Now, I know it sounds like a little bit of a repeat in the Masechta. It is. But the first time we discussed it was in the first parak where we were talking about Peter Chamor. Now we're talking about Peter Bechor Tahora, Behemoth Bechor Tahora, the firstborn of a kosher animal. That's the second parak and onward in this Masechta. And so, but it's basically the same discussion. And the rules are very straightforward, meaning if you have a animal that comes from another animal and there's a total mutation, and the offspring looks nothing like its mother, so then there's no kedushas bechor. If there is some similarity, what the Gemara describes as mixas simanim, then there is kedushas bechor. Mind you, by the way, mixas simanim, I made this point numerous times, but you know, the more I say it, the more I get to digest it. By mixas simanim, so even though there is kedushas bechor, but it's not going to be brought as a carbon. Why not? Because it's a shinui. In other words, so that is a deviation from its parent. So although there is some similarity, which creates a kedushas bechor, but at the same time as a shinui, which is kind of like a mum, and therefore you're not going to be offering it as a carbon. What do you do with it? Like any bechor with a mum. So what you do with it, it's ocha b'mum, it's eaten with its mum. Meaning bechor, once it gets blemished, so then you're allowed to eat it without having to bring it as a carbon. Fine, but it has kedushas bechor, which means it has to be given over to a kohen. And finally, if it's totally similar to its mother, so then obviously that has kedushas bechor, and it's going to be offered as a carbon. Good.
Because it doesn't look like the mother.
Correct. Meaning if it's mixas simanim, so then that you don't have to wait. The mixas simanim is the mum. Okay. And good. And that's and that is what we discussed yesterday. We left off at the two dots halfway down on Yizayin Amad Aleph, Amar Rav Yochanan, Modi Rav Meir. So picking it up right where we left off yesterday. So where is Rav Meir going to agree? First of all, let's just back up for a moment. Rav Meir, Chachamim, what's going on? It's going on a braisa that was quoted some lines earlier on Yizayin Amad Aleph. If you look two wide lines down, Amar Rav Oshi Min Ardav Aisi Masnitsa, also Rav Oshi Min Ardav Aisi Masnitsa Biadei. So Rav Oshi comes in and he brings in a braisa, and the braisa reads as follows. Rachel bas Eiz, Veiz bas Rachel. So clearly we're describing a mutation. The sheep gave birth to a goat. The goat gave birth to a sheep. And Rav Meir mechayv v'chachamim pochim. So Rav Meir says rechayv and the chachamim say you're pater. Now the position of the chachamim, very well understood. It's a mutation. And so therefore there is no kedushas bechor. Rav Meir says rechayv, how could you be chayv? It's a mutation. So if you remember yesterday, at the end of our shir yesterday, so the Gemara offered three different explanations on how Rav Meir could possibly say that you're chayiv. So the Gemara gave various suggestions. Okay? And go back to yesterday. Yesterday wasn't recorded. But anyway, go back to yesterday and review the three different possibilities of how Rav Meir could say you're chayiv if the offspring is a mutation. In the meantime, Am Rav Yochanan Mod Rav Meir B'Siyusha Rosh Chodesh, when it comes to the goat of Rosh Chodesh, to be Inan Ben Si'ira. So here by the Seer of Rosh Chodesh, we know that on Rosh Chodesh, you know, it works out well. Today's Rosh Chodesh.
Yeah.
Right. It's good when those things happen. So the Seer of Rosh Chodesh, so you need a Ben Si'ira. What does that mean, a Ben Si'ira? The goat has to be the product of a goat. What? Of course it does. As Rashi points out, as will be clear in the Gemara, it means that it has to be a pedigree, it has to be a purebred, And the pedigree and the purebred has to go all the way back to Maisa Bracious. Now, in preparing the daf, so I was asked a question. How could you possibly know that? And so I suggested, and I don't know if I'm right, but I suggested, I'm going to suggest it again, is that I don't think you need documentation that takes us all the way back, 5,700 some odd years ago. You don't need documentation. In other words, the chazaka is that it is a purebred. But if you happen to know that 5, 7, 10 generations ago, so there was some mutation, something went wrong, so then you can't use it. Anyway, point is that it has to be a purebred, and it genealogically has to be fit, and has to go back to Maisa Bracious. My time, Amakra, Echad. Because every time you see this, you go through Parshas Pinchas, and you hear about the Karbanos on the various Yamim Tovim, Rosh Chodesh and all the Yamim Tovim, so you keep hearing about Chatas Echad, or Chatas Achas. So it's one. So one meaning unique, Hamayuchad. So in other words, this has to be the one where it's basically a replication of the goat that was created by Maisa Bracious. So the Gemara says then that's good. It's a great drasha. Don't we have another drasha that basically makes the same point? Which is Shor Okesev. This is now Parshas Emor. Shor Okesev. Parshas Emor, by the way, they're reading this week in Eretz Yisrael. We are behind. Okay, but, or they're ahead. Okay, one or the other. So Shor Okesev Pradla Klein. So Shor Okesev tells us that it cannot be a crossbreed. Oes Pradla Nidbam. Oes tells us that it can't be a mutation. So Tzricha. Presumably, we already have a drasha that makes exactly that point. So the Gemara says, not so fast. So the Gemara says, okay, if I had that drasha over there, so I would have said, fine. Fine. So in other words, it has to be a replication of its mother, but we don't have to go back generation upon generation. We don't have to go back to Maisa Bracious. We just simply look back a couple generations. Or I'll say even better, we only have to look back one generation. But this idea which we're expressing right now of Echad Miyuchad, which means that you have to go back multiple generations, you have to go back to Maisa Bracious. So if I only had the drasha from Parshas Emor, I wouldn't have to go back all those generations. And if I only had the drasha by Parshas Pinchas of Echad HaMiyuchad, I would have said, you know this requirement, that it has to be a goat going all the way back to Maisa Bracious, and there can be no mutations at any point historically, I would have said, fine. That's a very high standard, obviously. That high standard is for a carbon chova, an obligatory carbon. But if I'm going to be giving a voluntary carbon, so it's voluntary. So maybe the rules can be relaxed just a little bit. That's why the necessity of both of these drushas. Continuing in the Gemara, Rabbi Achabar Yaakov HaKomodim, Dein Lokin of Simro. Okay. What about the wool of our mutated sheep? Let's say I make a garment of wool and linen. Typically, that's an Avera in the Torah. It's an Issa in the Torah. It's called Shatnez. We're all familiar. Let's say the wool that I use is coming from a mutated sheep. Let's say the sheep was the product of a goat. And what came out of the goat is a sheep, obviously a mutation. And so now I use its wool for kalayim. Okay, so obviously, don't. Obviously. In other words, even if it's not an Issa Daraisa, which the Gemara right now is entertaining, certainly, in the very least, it's Marasayan. You look like you're wearing wool and linen. But the issue is, the Gemara's discussion now is, are you violating an Issa min HaTorah? So, ain lokin al simro. So the Gemara says, you're not going to get Malkus. Why not? Mishum kalayim shenamar. Lo si ba'ashaneiz ma pishan shalon nishtana. Av semer shalon nishtana. So the Gemara says like this. Well, you know, linen has gone unchanged all these years. Now, it's interesting that the Gemara is assuming that linen cannot be crossed. It can't be. You can't graft it. It can't. In other words, the Gemara is assuming. It's an assumption. In a little bit, we're gonna push back on this assumption. But the Gemara says that when it comes to linen, it's linen now that we used 500, 1,000, 2,000 years ago. And just like the linen that qualifies for shatnez has to be something which is unchanged. It is unchanged. So too, when it comes to the wool has to come from an animal that has gone through no mutations and has been a replication of its mother going all the way back in time. So Amra Papa Hakomodim, fine. So that's halacha number one. So wool coming from a mutated animal is not going to create an Issa d'Oraisa of shatnez. Again, caution, don't do it, meaning it's still Usser, on what degree of Isser? By the way, the Gemara says you're not getting Malkus for it. From the Gemara, it sounds like still an Isser Daraisa, not just subject to Malkus. But you could make the argument that it's not even an Isser Daraisa, but it still is an Isser Darabanan. In any event, that's one. Point number two. Amar Rav Papa Hakamodin Shetzimur Pasal Tcheles. Okay, now there's a mitzvah of Tcheles. A mitzvah of Tcheles is to have wool dyed in a certain blue color. We're all familiar, Tcheles. And we think of it primarily in terms of tzitzis. Also, Big Day Kahuna. Various Big Day Kahuna also need the Tcheles, the blue dyed wool. So what if this wool is coming again from our mutated sheep? So, it's simply disqualified. It's no good. So we know that we have juxtaposed in the Torah and Parshas Kiseitse the psukim of the Isser of Shanes, the mitzvah tzitzis. So whatever qualifies as an Isser of Shanes is going to also qualify for the mitzvah tzitzis. And since mutated wool, or wool coming from a mutated animal, is not going to create the Isser of Kalayim, it's also unable to perform the mitzvah of tzitzis. Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak HaKalmodim Shein Simra Metame B'Negayim. Another halacha of wool coming from a mutated sheep, and that is it's not going to be subject to Tumas Negayim. Just read about it in Parshas Tazria and Mitzora, where if I have a garment, that a garment could also be subject to Tzaras. What garments can be subject to Tzaras? The Torah says either wool or linen. And again, we're going to be making the same point. The wool that is only subject to Tzaras has to be wool coming from a non-mutated sheep. Shenemra bebeget zemra bebeget pishtam, pishtim. And again, how do I know that? Because the Torah puts together one pasuk by negayim of a garment, the fabrics of the materials of wool and linen. And same point. Ma pishtim shlo nishtana av tzemra shlo nishtana. So just like linen has gone unchanged all these years, so too the wool has to be unchanged all these years. Am Rav Ashi af anu ne'emar. So Rav Ashi says, I want to get in on this discussion. And I'm also going to make a similar point. We're going to leave wool, even though most of these points have been, all these points have been revolving around wool. But I'm going to make a similar point, says Rav Ashi, just not about wool. Hidla gefen al gabi te'ina. So let's say I graft together vines, obviously grapes, together with figs. And so now we're growing grapes, but the grapes have a little bit of fig in them, a little fig taste in them. So first of all, it's an isser of klein, meaning you're not allowed to do that. But on top of that, now that it is no longer purebred or purebred wine, that means to say, yeno pasul nesachim. You cannot use the wine for the mitzvah nesachim. With carbon, there are supplemental offerings that are brought with carbonos. That's called nesachim. We spent a lot of time talking about it in Menachos, Masechta Menachos. So if the wine is adulterated, so then it's no longer good for nesachim. My time up, zevach nesachim. Ma zevach shalom nishana, zevach shalom nishana. Now, as we already established, when it comes to the animal for the carbon, the animal for the carbon has to be a purebred. Has to be a purebred and a non-mutation. Same thing is true regarding the wine. If the wine becomes now adulterated, so even though it's a natural adulteration, but still, once it's adulterated, so now it can't be used for nesachim. Finally, the Gemara now just pushes back just a little bit. You're telling me that when it comes to pishtan, when it comes to linen, meaning from the flax, so you're telling me that the flax can go is incapable of any kind of shinui. What happens when you take the flax and you put it over a higa? Higa is some sort of bush. In other words, isn't it going to be that the bush is going to infuse some sort of change, some sort of characteristic change in the flax? And you're asserting that when it comes to the flax seed, it's gone unchanged all these years? So the Gemara says, even if I were to do that, even if I were to plant other vegetation along with the flax seed, the flax is really not going to change its characteristic. The Gemara makes exactly this point. Sorry, this is the Gemara just simply finishing up asking the question. Answers the Gemara, Amar lei zeh nishana recho, vezeh lo nishana recho. And the Gemara's basic answer is there is no characteristic change when you take a flaxseed and plant it with other vegetation. Its odor doesn't change, its aroma doesn't change. It's still characteristic-wise is flax, and it is flax, and it really goes unchanged even when planted with other things. Masha Einkein, when it comes to an animal, obviously it can be adulterated either through crossbreeding or through mutation. But it can become adulterated, and so the Gemara says all the points that we made are acceptable points. Okay. We start now the Mishnah when Yuzayin and Amud Aleph at the bottom of the Amud, and we're starting the Mishnah discussing the topic of Efshelet Samsein. Okay. And I get to I get to make the joke that, you know, I think I probably 7.5 years ago. I didn't listen to myself 7.5 years ago. In general, it's hard to do. But 7.5 years ago, I probably made this joke. You have an animal giving birth for the first time. It's twins coming out, and it's neck and neck. Okay, thank you. The its firstborn now happens to be its firstborns, and they are coming out at the same time, or at least it seems so. So, you know, in horse racing, so there's something called the photo finish. So over here, so maybe we could, you know. I'm not really sure if this all falls under the category of just. I'm just giving a description only so that we get a great visualization. But in other words, we're going to film it. We're going to then replay in slow motion, and we'll see which one of them came out first. Okay, none of that's going to happen. But there really is a basic question which comes up now in the Gemara, and that's the following: when we have this discussion of Efshel Etzamtzem, so the question really on the table is as follows. There really are two questions. One. Is it possible that they came out simultaneously? Okay. And then two, let's even say that it's possible. So then does that mean there's going to be two Bechoros? Meaning, isn't the whole idea of Bechor meaning the firstborn? Or maybe the firstborn just simply means the first one to come out. Here, two happen to have been the first one to come out. They have come out first. So there's one question of, is it possible? And then, even if it is possible, are we then going to slap a label on both of them, a status on both of them, that they both are Bechorim? Okay. This is our discussion, and here we start with the Mishnah. Rechosh Elo Bichra. So we have now a sheep, and for the first time in her life now she's giving birth. V'yalda Shnei Zecharim, she gave birth to twin males. V'yatsu Shnei Rashem Ka'achas. And the two heads came out at the same time. Rabbi Yossi Glili Omer Shnei Lekoin. Now, Rav Yossi Aglili takes a really interesting position. Congratulations, you have a Bechor and you have a Bechor. Right? So your animal gave birth to two Bechorim. Shenamar Hazacharim LaHashem. Now, when you read the Pasuk in the end of Parshas Bo, which first introduces us to the whole topic of Bechor, so the Torah says Hazacharim LaHashem. The males are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, you know the simple Pshat in the Pasuk. Simple Pshat in the Pasuk. Is that when it says Hazicharim, it means your firstborn males of all your flock. The Torah is not describing our scenario over here. And yes, this is not the simple pshat in the pasuk. But still, Rav Yossi says, I have a pasuk that clearly articulates that you can have multiple bechor in one event. Now the Chachamim say no. Now what they're saying no to, what they're objecting to, is really the first premise. Meaning, what they're going to subscribe to on the second premise, can there be multiple Zecharim? Maybe or maybe not. And we're actually going to discuss that in more detail. But it's really the first premise that they're arguing with. Meaning, Efshel Etzamtzem. There is no way for us to know whether or not the two came out simultaneously. One of them is a Bechor. Now, obviously, we're going to be hamstrung by the fact that we don't know which one of them is a Bechor, but only one of them a Bechor and not both of them as a Bechor. Ela echel lo ve'echel kohen. One is going to go to you, and one is going to go to the kohen. Okay, now, give me a little bit of time. There's a lot I got to speak out. So just give me a minute, maybe even two. Okay. Point number one. Consideration number one. When we say ef shalat samsem, so what are we saying? So here's what we're saying. So two events cannot happen simultaneously. Now. That's EF Shalat Samsein. There really are two different ways of how to say that. One way to say it, EF Shalat Samsein, is that two events simply cannot occur simultaneously. In fact, when you read Rashi, that is the sense that you get from Rashi. Rashi, EF Shalat Samsein, Shiatsu Shnei Roshem Ke'echad, Ela Ha'echad Yatsa Tchila, V'lo Di'inan Hainihu. From Rashi, the simple reading of Rashi, and the Rambam, by the way, which I'm not reading right now, but the Rambam is also going to read a lot like this, is that, look, if I were to break it down, I go back to my absurdity that I described at the beginning of the Mishnah, where I put everything in slow motion and I really freeze frame the moment, so you cannot have these two events occur simultaneously. It just simply can't. So one way to say EF Shalat Samsem is just simply two events cannot occur simultaneously. That is one way to understand it. The other way to understand it, which is Tosus's way of understanding it, and Tosus discusses at length on the Amud Beza of Yudzayin of, I was going to say today's daf, really it's yesterday's daf, but Tosus says, no, Irshal Samse means that in theory it's possible that the events can occur simultaneously, but Irshal Samse is there to teach us that we don't have the physical ability to perceive and understand that the two events occurring simultaneously. We're just limited as human beings to see these events occurring at the same time. So there are two different ways to say it. Tosfos really is bent on his pshat being the correct pshat, not the first way I said it, that two events cannot occur at the same time. They can, it's just that we have the inability to perceive it. And you see the Tosfos on the Amud Beis, it discusses this at length, right? The big Tosfos, that's what I'm saying. So anyway, so that is point number one. Point number two. Okay, so the position of the Chachamim, it's a good position, meaning assuming Yeshal Tzamtzim, in other words, we cannot determine that the two came at the same time. So one is going to be yours and one's going to go to the Kohen. That's insufficient. One's going to go to you and one's going to go to the Kohen. We don't know which one's the Bechor. What are you going to do? Okay, so we have Rashi. So Rashi writes as follows. V'hasheni. Rashi, the last Rashi on the Amud. V'hasheni, shenishali saw yira achi istayiv. So we're going to have to say the following. Because we don't know which one is the Bechor, so here's going to be the behavior of both the Kohen and the Yisrael. Now, by the way, I know the Rashi is, we haven't gotten to that part of the Mishnah yet, but still, we can make the point right now. It's going to be the same point. Did the Kohen receive the Bechor? Maybe. Again, we're subscribing right now to the opinion of the Chacham. We're saying Eif Shalat Samsem. We're saying one of them is a Bechor, we don't know. Okay, good. Give one to the Kohen and keep one by yourself. And in just a moment, we're going to also ask the question, which one do I give to the Kohen? I'd say the Bechor, but we don't know which one the Bechor is. But we'll get to that in just a moment. But now the Bechor has received, the Kohen has received his possible Bechor, but we're not sure. Okay, good. So we're not sure. So you, Mr. Kohen, are going to do the following. You're going to take the animal and you're going to wait. And you're going to wait till it develops the blemish. And once it receives the blemish, then you're going to be able to eat it. You can't offer it as a carbon because it may not be a Bechor. So to offer it as a carbon when it's not a Bechor, that's called Chulun Shebazara. You can't do that. So what you do is you wait till it gets a blemish. Once it gets a blemish, Ocha B'mumo, eat it with its blemish. Now we turn to the Yisrael. And what are you going to do, Mr. Yisrael, for the animal that you retain for yourself? Do you know the animal you retain for yourself might be a Bechor? Oh, okay, good. So what he'll do is the same thing. He'll wait till it gets to blemish, and when it gets a blemish, then he'll eat it with its blemish. Rashi makes all these points. Rashi writes, Vasheni, initially saw Yirat Chistai, Vacharka Yochal. This Suffolk Bechorhu. Obviously, both of these animals now are Suffolk Bechor. Hilka Chenu Nishka Tamim. It cannot be shechted as a non blemished animal. Uva Oso Shokorin Lowitz Derech Lamemar, Devada Enu Nishka Rashi Ebomum. Now, Rashi says over here, the Mishnah is not going to make any mention about the Bechor that was given over to the Kohen. Rashi now says the Mishnah didn't need to say it. It's obvious. Meaning the points that I just made, which I learned from Rashi, these points are obvious points. You didn't give the Kohen a Bechor, you gave him a Suffolk Bechor. He's not going to offer it as a carbon. Debizmana Zemairi. First of all, Rashi says the Mishnah historically was written before or after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. Now we know the final editing of the Mishnah was over 100 years after Churban Beis HaMikdash. But okay, but that in of itself doesn't mean anything. Meaning these Mishnahs existed for years, centuries, right? Unclear how long the Mishnahs were in the form in which we are reading them. But certainly they were around for many years prior to the final editing, approximately the year 200 of the Common Era, so which is over 100 years after Churban Bayis Sheni. But still, one possibility, says Rashi, is that our Mishnah is talking about Bezman is when there's no Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so every Kohen who receives his Bechor is going to wait till it gets a blemish. Rashi says, you know what, Inami, alternatively, I could say as follows. But it's still going to be the same point. When you hand this Kohen the Suffolk Bechor, same story. Kohen's not going to offer it on the Mizbeach. The Suffolk Bechor who? Again, everything I said I learned from Rashi. So I know it sounds repetitive. Just me learning from Rashi. Now, why is the Mishnah focusing only on the Bechor retained by the Yisrael? So because the Mishnah wanted to tell us an additional point, and that is the following. Now that the Yisrael held his Bechor, again, I say his Bechor, meaning his Suffolk Bechor, so now, fine, so the Yisrael gets to keep it. All of it? Well, as we're going to see in the Mishnah in just a moment, there is an opinion that says, no, not all of it. It's a Bechor, but it may not be a Bechor. On the side that it's a Bechor, so the whole thing should go to the Kohen. On the side that it's not a Bechor, okay, so the whole thing stays by the Yisrael, and it will. What about the Matanos? Zor l'chai v'keva. So, as we will see, there's an opinion that says that that should go to the Kohen. And it's a really logical position. Because the Kohen now knocks on the door of the Yisrael and says, look, thank you very much for giving me the Bechor, or one of the two animals. Great. That other animal, you know, I don't mean to be a chazer, but that other animal, either it's mine, here are your options. Either it's mine, or it's yours, but then you owe me the Matnos Kahuna. Which is, again, a really logical argument. And we'll see in just a moment, there's a Tana who subscribes to this argument. And therefore, the Kohen is entitled to the Matanos of that second animal, retained by the Yisrael. Rashi tells us that's why the Mishnah is focusing on the Yisrael, because you have this additional point of the Matanos. Good. With all that stated now, let's go back to the Mishnah, and let's see basically all this inside. Now, what our Mishnah is going to be grappling with is the following. So again, let's quickly recap. We have an animal that gave birth to twin boys. The first one, we don't know which came out first, according to the Chachamim. Again, according to Rav Yosi Aglili, Efshel Etzam same, where we have the ability to say that both came out at the same time, and they're both going to be Bechorim. Good. But now we're within the Shita of the Chachamim. No, only one of them came out first. Which one? We don't know. Efshel Etzam same. So now what are you going to do? You're going to give one to the Kohen, you're going to keep one for yourself. So, one question we're going to deal with right now is, well, which one do I give to the Kohen? Is it arbitrary? Do I decide? Or let me say it better. Let's say one animal is clearly better quality than the other animal. Can the Kohen choose? So, the Rabbi Tarfon, Omer HaKohen Bar Lo Asa Yafe. So, according to Rabbi Tarfon, what I just suggested is absolutely correct. Rabbi Tarfon says that the Kohen gets to choose, and obviously he'll choose the better one. And it's within his right to choose. We're going to discuss Rabbi Tarfon in more detail in just a moment. Rabbi Kiva, Omer Mishamnim Beinehem. Mishamnim Beinehem. Rabbi Kiva says, no, Mishamnim Beinehem. It is right now in a really ambiguous term, but I'll give it away, right? Spoiler alert. So I'll give away what Rabbi Kiva meant. What he meant was, is that the Kohen will take the inferior one, and the owner will take the better one. Why? Well, stay tuned. We're going to discuss that also in the Gemara. Vehasheni, Yireh Ad Sheyistayev. Now, the second animal, that's going to be retained by the owner. So you have to wait till it gets the blemish. As we discussed in detail in Rashi, it's a Suffolk Bechor. So he can't eat it in an unblemished state. And Bechayv B'matanos. Now, according to the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, the owner has to now take the Zorlachai V'keva of the animal that he retained for himself and give that to the Kohen. And again, I already explained it. The reason why is because Mima Nafshach. Your two possibilities are, this animal that you retained is the Bechor. If so, the whole thing goes to the Kohen. Or, this animal that you retained is not the Bechor. Okay, you have to give Zor L'chai V'keva to the Kohen. Either way, the Zor L'chai V'keva have to go to the Kohen. Fine. Rabbi Yossi, Poter. And Rabbi Yossi says, no, the Zor L'chai V'keva does not have to go to the Kohen, for reasons which we're going to explain in the Gemara. No. No, oh, I'm sorry, this is Rabbi Neza. I'm sorry, I saw the confusion. Rabbi Yossi Aglila and Rabbi Yossi are two different tanaim. Good. Now, next part of the Mishnah. Meisach HaMehem. Now, what if one of them dies prior to you having given either one of them to the Kohen? So Rabbi Tarfon Amar Yachlokus. Rabbi Tarfon says, okay, now here's what you're going to do with the remaining animal. So it's a Suffolk Bechor. So Rabbi Tarfon says, okay, split it. You know what I mean. Shecht it. And then wait till it gets a blemish, then shecht it, and then we're going to go halvesies. I'll keep half, and the Kohen will receive the other half. Now, that should be a little bit confusing to all of us here, because we saw Rabbi Tarfon in this very Mishnah. And Rabbi Tarfon says, what happens? Rabbi Tarfon says, the better one is given to the Kohen. So, shouldn't we therefore say that if one of them died prior to the Nesina, figure out which one was the better one, and then whichever one was the better one, hey, that was the Kohen, and the one that was inferior, that remains with the Baal Bayis. Why is Rabbi Tarfon talking about splitting the remaining animal? That is confusing. The Gemara is going to ask that question. Good. And Rabbi Kiva...
What do you do with the dead one? Who does it belong to?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Split?
Unclear. So Rabbi Kiva Omer, Amotz Mechaver, Alaviraya. And Rabbi Kiva says, wait one second. You can slow down there, Mr. Cohen. right? The we don't know which one died. We don't know which one survived. Did the Bechor die? Did the non-Bechor die? And now you're coming at me with really a financial claim. So I'm Motime Chaver al Averaya. You don't have enough proof to remove this animal from my possession, and so therefore I get to keep the animal. And again, I'm going to remind everybody, obviously it's still a Suffolk Bechor, so you're going to have to wait till it gets a blemish, and then only then can the owner eat it, but still, Cohen can't take it away from him.
Why do you apply the same principle just, in the case where there are two animals?
Just wait, I'm sorry, just wait. There's so much to discuss over here. Let's first get through the basics. Zachron Akeva ain't kind of Cohen clone. Now, let's say, same scenario, but in the twin birth, it was a male and female. And again, their heads came out at the same time, and we hold like the Chamim, Yev Shalat Sam, same. So now what? So now the Mishnah makes a quick ruling regarding this scenario, and that is the Kohen gets nothing. What do you mean? Isn't it a Suffolk? And in the previous Suffolk, so we had a really lengthy discussion of what should be done under the circumstances. And over here, all we did is we just changed one factor, and that is that instead of both of them being male, one's a male and the other a female, and here we're going to say, Cohen gets nothing? What changed? I mean, I know what changed. Okay, good. So, well, obviously, much to discuss in this case as well. Obviously, in this Mishnah, there is a tremendous amount to discuss. Okay, so, we start off with the very beginning of the Mishnah, and we're going to go step by step through the Mishnah, and we start off with the opinion of Rav Yosef Glili versus the Chachamim. Rav Yosef Glili takes the position of Efshel Etzamsem, that it is possible to be precise, and if I gauge that the two heads came out simultaneously, they came out simultaneously. And therefore, Mazel Tov, two times over, it's a Bechor and it's a Bechor, the two Bechorim. So, Amr Debe Rav Yana Le Rav Yosef Glili Shamin Alei Damar Efshel Etzamsem B'dei Shamayim, V'kol Shekem B'dei Adam. Now, what the Gemara is going to do over here is it's going to compartmentalize into two different categories. What the Gemara describes as Efshel Etzamsem B'dei Shamayim versus B'dei Adam. Now, what does that mean? It means as follows. Look, we're now discussing basically our human ability to be able to make a call on equal amounts. And by the way, in terms of quantification, we are going to be quantifying linear measurement, volume, who won the race, meaning basically whatever is quantifiable, if you take the position of Efshel Etzamsem, which Rav Yosef Glili does, so in all these cases we could say which came first, or we can even say it's a tie. So, and we're going to see so many different examples of this as we go through our sugya. Now, there's one. Now, the Gemara is going to now break it down into two different categories, Bidei Shamayim, Bidei Adam. What does that mean? It's very simple. Bidei Shamayim means it was a natural event, like the birth of two babies. A natural event. The Gemara's assertion or assumption is the following. It's going to be harder to judge on a natural event, and it makes sense. Mm-hmm. In a natural event, so we weren't there sitting and waiting and measuring. It just kind of happened organically. That's what birth happens. And we just caught a glimpse of what happened. If you're going to say Efshel Etzamsem in a natural event, what it was called, what the Gemara refers to as Bidei Shamayim, you're certainly going to say Efshel Etzamsem in an event where we are manufacturing the event. Let's say, for example, we're measuring, right? And somebody dies between two cities, and now we take out our measuring sticks, right? A topic in which we're going to be discussing momentarily. So this is what's called Efshel Etzamsem Bidei Adam. Now, obviously, the guy died, and that was beyond our control. But now that we're sitting there and we're actually measuring, so for sure, if you subscribe to Efshel Etzamsem in an organic event, in a natural event, something which is Bidei Shamayim, so for sure you're going to be subscribing to Efshel Etzamsem in a scenario of Bidei Adam, where we're actually, we're sitting there with our measuring sticks, and we are actively measuring the event. Good. So for Rav Yosef Glili, there's really nothing to discuss. He says Efshel Etzamsem by a birth of two babies, of two animals coming out of its mother, and he says Efshel Etzamsem there, he's going to say Efshel Etzamsem everywhere. That's a given. The Gemara says, but here's where it gets interesting. Now let's turn our attention to the Chachamim. We know the Chachamim argue in Rav Yosef Glili in our Mishnah, which is a natural event. Would the Chachamim also argue with Rav Yosef Glili if it was Bidei Adam, if it was something where we're intentionally trying to measure two items? Would he say it under those circumstances? Oh, good. That's the Gemara's question with a discussion, and you're going to be so happy. And a conclusion. Okay, so the Gemara says, Efshel Etzamsem Bidei Shamayim, V'kol Shekem Bidei Adam, V'Rabbanan, Bidei Shamayim, Efshel Etzamsem. So I know what the Chachamim say when it comes to a natural event like the birth of twin babies. The Chachamim say, Efshel Etzamsem. but maybe it's because it's a natural event, and we didn't get a good look at it. But bidei adam mai. But what if it's an event where we're actively trying to measure the event? Do they say yefshel etzamtzem, or do they agree with Rav Yosef Lili of efshel etzamtzem? And by the way, according to Tosfos, remember what I discussed at the beginning of Shir today and the beginning of the Mishnah? According to Tosfos, it's easier to see how these two categories are two different categories. Because remember what Tosfos said? If you subscribe to E Efshel Etzamtzem, like the Chachamim do, so what does that mean? According to Tosfos, what it means is that there really is a reality of two things occurring simultaneously. We just don't have the ability to perceive it. Oh, so now you understand, says Tosfos, how the Gemara can now break it up into different categories. When the event happened by itself and we had no input in the event, so then you can understand it's very difficult for us to perceive, especially when we didn't have control on the event. But once it's bidei adam, where we're actively measuring, so maybe under those circumstances, so maybe we do have the perception. So for Tosfos, it really is good how the Gemara breaks it up into these two categories. Tashma, the Gemara says, well, let's consider. Back in Zvachim, we discussed this extensively. The bloods of certain karbanos are put on the upper half of the Mizbeach. The bloods of other karbanos are put on the lower half of the Mizbeach. And there is a dividing red line, the Chut HaSikra, which is wrapping around, separating the north from the south. What I probably described back then as the Mason-Dixon line of the Mizbeach. And the Gemara says now, we're going to measure, obviously, meaning the Mizbeach is a certain height, and we're going to measure, and we're going to put the red line over there. Now, if you subscribe to the idea of EF Charlotte Samsem, even but when we're actively trying to measure, which we are over here, so that means what? It means that we're imprecise. We didn't draw the red line at the exact midmark. What we did is we went a couple of millimeters northbound or a couple millimeters southbound. Doesn't that mean by definition that even though I hit above the line, but because of our imprecision, so doesn't that mean that at least it's within the realm of possibility that I didn't go over the line? So the Gemara says, so isn't that going to be a concern? The Gemara says, this is a solvable problem. Right? I'm sure all of us thought of the answer. The Gemara says, here's what you could do. You can actually make the red line a little thicker. And so therefore, it accounts for any human error. Good. Tashma, the Gemara says, well, fine. Mimidas Kalim, Mimidas Mizbeach. So the Gemara says, you know, we have instructions to build the Beis HaMikdash. Right? And it is to measure. Meaning, how big is the Aron? So open up Parshas Truma and Tetzaveh, and Parshas Truma, and you'll see. How big does the menorah, how tall does the menorah have to be? Once again, there's a Midah. And this is true for all the Kalim in the Beis HaMikdash. This is true for the Mizbeach. Everything is made to measure. And so now, if you subscribe to EF Shalat Samsem, even with human endeavor, so then how are we building a Mishkan? How are we building a Beis HaMikdash? It's imprecise. So the Gemara says, Shani Hasam Derachmana Amar Avid V'chol Heich Damasis L'mei V'nichalai. So the Gemara says like this, really profound answer. The Gemara says, look, even if I subscribe to EF Shalat Samsem, that's impossible for us to arrive at perfection. When the Torah gives us the mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdash and the Kalim, and even though it's to measure, the Torah accounts for human error. Meaning built into the mitzvah is the idea of we're imperfect. And so therefore our measurements are going to be imperfect. And still it's a fulfillment of the mitzvah. Fine. And then right, the pasuk quotes, the Gemara quotes the pasuk, "Kol bechsav miyad Hashem, alai yiskil." Unclear exactly what that pasuk is doing over here. That pasuk just simply means that the Beis HaMikdash has to be made to measure, but that's not going on the answer. That's going on the question. Anyway, let's move along. Amrav Ketina, Tashma, Chilku l'shneim ein shavim shneim tameim lefi she'iyah shalat samtzeim. Okay, I have an oven made up of kli cheres of earthenware, and it's tameh. And so, how do we remove the tuma? It's only one way to remove the tuma. You can't tovel in the mikvah, right? Kli cheres is not tovelable. Okay, it's a made-up word, but it works. So what do you do? You have to break it. You shaber, and if you have a piece that maintains its majority of the original oven, so it's still going to have the status of an oven. It's still going to be tameh. So what you have to do is you have to break it into minority pieces. Well, if you break it into two, one's a majority, one's a minority. So you break it into three. Mazel tov. Let's say I broke it into two and it's pretty hard to tell the difference between which is the larger and which is the smaller. So the Mishnah tells us that if you break it into two, chilku l'shnayim, so ve'ein shavim shneim tameim. So lefi she'ef shel tzamtzem. Oh, so the Mishnah says like this. Because of our inability to perceive which one is the larger piece, which one's the smaller piece, so they're both going to maintain tumah. We're assuming that they're both the larger piece because the efshalat samsem. Now here, this was obviously done with human endeavor. We were trying to make a clean break of this earthenware oven, and we're saying right now that it's impossible to be precise. This would sound like that we're saying efshalat samsem even bidei adam. Am Rav Kahana shani kli cheretz al v'yish bagumah. So the Gemara says, well, you know, when it comes to an oven, it's kli cheretz, it's earthenware. I called it a clean break. No such thing. An earthenware, because it's so porous, and because when we try to break it, and even though we're trying to break it cleanly, there's no such thing as a clean break. And therefore, here, it is impossible to gauge which one is the larger piece. Right? When you break the matzah and you have the afikomen, right? And the larger piece you're supposed to retain at the end. And, you know, you hold up the two pieces. I know this happens in every home. So I'm convinced. And you hold up the larger piece. Which one's the larger piece? You ask the little one. And, you know, he gives you, renders an opinion, and whether he's right or wrong, okay, good.
You could weigh it.
Huh? Right? Okay, good. Anyway, so sometimes it's impossible to discern. And the matzah, by the way, much like the kli cheres, meaning because there is no clean break of it, sometimes it's really hard to tell. Good. Tashma, the Gemara says, Nimsa mechuvah min shtei ayarvah, shtei mevios, shtei agalos divrei Rabbi Eliezer. And now we get to the egla rufa talk. So now we're talking about measuring. Here we're talking about linear measurements. And so now we all know the story, the end of Parsha Shoftim. So the Torah there outlines a scenario in which somebody was killed between two cities. And now, who's responsible? So, by the way, I know the answer of who's responsible, whoever did the murder. He's responsible. Okay, good. But we don't know who the murderer is right now. So the Torah goes through a process, and the process in which the Zakenim of the proximate city are going to be accepting a certain amount of responsibility. Good. Parsha of Egla Arufa. Our discussion today is going to be a very limited discussion about the measuring process. What happens now as we take out our measuring sticks, and they're not sticks, they're ropes, but anyway, we take out our measuring sticks and we measure from the city to see which one is closer. And after careful measurement, what we've discovered now is something amazing. It's a tie. This body is now found equidistant to two cities. And I say equidistant, I mean that in the most mathematical terms possible. Literally, it's the same. And so now, what do we say? So, there's two shitas brought down in our first brisa. We're going to have a lot of brisas discussing this event. So, this actually is a tosefta. Rabbi Eliezer, I'm sorry. So, Rabbi Eliezer says, to both cities, you're both going to have to go through the process of bringing the Agla Rufa. Why? A tie goes to? Well, in baseball, it goes to the runner. But over here, a tie goes to both of them, according to Rabbi Eliezer. My time, Allah Mishum de Kasavi de Adam Eshlat Samsem, Vikrova Viafilu Krovos. Now, the Gemara is going to make three assumptions. Ready? Number one. Right now, Rabbi Eliezer subscribes to the Chachamim that generally Eshlat Samsem. Okay. Assumption number two. Assumption number two is that, yeah, that's true, but this is measuring through human endeavor. This is Bide Adam. And so therefore, even though he normally holds the Efshalat Samsem, but because we're actively measuring something, so therefore it's Efshalat Samsem. And then assumption number three. Now assuming that we can ascertain equidistance, so now we're up to step number three, or assumption number three. So how many cities now have to bring the Agla Rufa? Both. Even though the Torah says, Va'ir HaKirova, which is in singular, Rabbi Eliezer's understanding is, but if there are two Kirova cities, meaning it's equidistant, then they're both going to have to bring it. And that's when the Gemara says, Krova, V'afilu Krovos. Good. These are the three assumptions now built into the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara basically knocks out the first assumption. Lo, Rabbi Eliezer said, look, Rabbi Yossi, Aglila, Damar, Eshelet, Samson, Bidei Shemaim, V'kol Shekein, Bidei Adam. So as we turn now to the top of Yud Ches Amud Aleph, so the Gemara says, you are incorrect about the first assumption. You thought the Rabbi Eliezer of this Bryce is going like the Chachamim. No, he's not. He's going like Rav Yossi Aglili. Rav Yossi Aglili is of the position that Efshar Letzamsem, certainly by Bidei Shamayim, and even more certainly Bidei Adam, when human endeavor is trying to do the measurement. So he subscribes to the opinion of Rav Yossi Aglili, so we no longer have a proof to our question. Our question was not within Rav Yossi Aglili, that was clear from the beginning. Our question was within the sheet of the Chachamim. Good. We are in the top of Yud Ches Amud Aleph. Neima Kitanai. So the Gemara now is suggesting that maybe this question is really subject to the Machlokas Atanai. And that's the following. Nimsa Mechuvah Mishtei Ayaros Layu Orphan Rabbi Eliezer Mishtei Mivishtei Agalos. So here in this Braisa now, discussing the same scenario, we did the measurement, we found equidistance between two cities to the corpse. So there are two opinions in this Braisa. Opinion number one, neither of them bring. Opinion number two, Rabbi Eliezer, they both bring. Now, what is that issue over here between these two positions? The Gemara is going to suggest. Myla b'hakimifli detanakama savar yeshu l'tzamtzim, Rabbi Eliezer savar, efshar l'tzamtzim. And so the Gemara now is suggesting is, this is at the core of the debate in terms of whether or not it's possible or impossible to arrive at precision. Rabbi Eliezer obviously subscribes to the idea that it's possible to arrive at precision, and therefore they both are going to have to bring. And the Chachamim say, no, it's impossible. So the Gemara says, wait one second, let's think this through. The tiz baraikas of a tanakama yef shalat samsem, amalo yor orphan yavian agla achas beshutfas v'yidnu. So which the Gemara now says, but wait one second. Let's even say that you're right. According to the Chachamim, so we cannot be precise. Impossible, EF Shalat Samtim. Fine. But what does that mean? It means that this body is now close to one of the cities we simply cannot ascertain. Fine. So now one of these two cities have to bring the Agla Rufa. We don't know which one. So why don't we do the following? Why don't we bring one Agla Rufa and the two cities will come to some sort of Tanai? If you're responsible to bring it, so then we'll just simply, in other words, they'll both buy the Egla, and if you're responsible to bring it, so then we'll just simply be mochel our half to you. And conversely, if we're responsible to bring it, so then you'll be mochel your half to us. So Elalani tonight dekol am eshel et samsim. So the Gemara says, so we're wrong, meaning that can't be the issue. So what the issue is that both of them subscribe to the idea of it's possible to be precise. And over here, what's at the core of the debate is the following. The Torah says, Ha'ira Krova, in the singular. And does that mean then, does the Torah allow, meaning we can be precise, and we can establish equidistance, does the Torah demand that the Egla Rufa is brought only when one city is proximate? Or does the Torah allow for the Egla Rufa to be brought when two cities are proximate, and that's the Nekud HaMachlokas between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, and when all said and done, we're now basically at an impasse. What's the impasse? What is the position of the Chachamim of Efshalat Samsein with human endeavor? If we are attempting to measure an event, so can we be precise? Again, here's what we know. If it's bidei shamayim, like the twin births of our Mishnah, so we know Rav Yossi says efshel tzamtzim. We know the Chachamim say efshel tzamtzim. That part's clear. But where the discussion started and where we're still discussing is, what if it's bidei adam? We're actively trying to measure it, and what would the Chachamim say under those circumstances? So my havi Allah. So the Gemara says, so let's try to arrive at a conclusion. I'm Rav Chia Barav and I'm Rav Amram Tana Nimsa Mechuva Mishtei Ayaros. So again, we're back to our Egla Rufa. And again, we've discovered equidistance. Rabbi Eliezer Amar Shtei Mevir Shtei Agalos. So for the third time now, we're hearing the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer. He has gone unchanged throughout the daf. Both cities are going to be bringing Egla Arufa. V'chachamim Amrim Yeviyu Egla Achas B'shutfus. And now we have a new Shita, the Shita of the Chachamim. And that is that one Egla Arufa is going to be brought jointly by the two cities. V'yitnu. My kasavi rabban. And now the Gemara says, now what is this position? So the Gemara says it's obvious. So e kasavi rabban and efshalat samsem v'krova v'afilu krova slesi tarte. If they subscribe to, we A, can establish equidistance, and B, krova v'afilu krovos, so then they're going to have to agree to Rabbi Eliezer, they're both going to bring the Agla Rufa. V'krova v'lo krovos afilu chada lo laisi. And if they say that we can establish equidistance, but the Torah just does not entertain the idea that multiple cities are bringing the Agla Rufa, so then it's a rejection, meaning neither of them bring it, like we said earlier. So there is only one conclusion, and that is the following. One, we cannot establish equidistance. And because of that, one of these cities is closer. We think it's a tie, but it's not. It's simply not a tie. One of these cities is closer. We can't tell. So therefore, one egg l'arufa is going to be brought jointly by these two cities. And now we have answered the question. Meaning, who subscribes to Yevshel Tzamtzim? That's the Chachamim. This is a case of human endeavor, because they are actively measuring. And we see Yevshel Tzamtzim even b'dei Adam. To conclude, so the Chachamim say Yevshel Tzamtzim, both in the category b'dei Shemaim and the category b'dei Adam.
They have to compromise, though, in terms of what to do.
It's not a compromise. What do you mean, compromise?
Compromise in terms of being in one half from both of them.
Good, but that's not a compromise. That's just simply an inability to decide, to determine which one's closer. So that's not based on compromise. It's based on the reality that we can't determine. Okay. Rebbe Tarfon Omer, HaKohen Barer Lo Es HaYafeh. Okay, now, two of them came out, and again, it's a tie. Or at least to us, it looks like a tie. And from this point going forward, Rav Yosef Aglili, that's the end of Rav Yosef Aglili for today. Meaning, he subscribes to Eshel Tzamtzim. He says they're both Bechorim. Okay. But we don't subscribe to Rav Yosef Aglili. We hold like the Chachamim. And the rest of our discussion today is going to revolve around the Shita of the Chachamim. One of them is the Bechor. Which one? We don't know. We simply don't know. Okay, good. So now we're going to give one to the Kohen and we're going to retain one for us. And again, remember everything I said back in the Mishnah. Because we don't know, the Kohen's going to have to wait till his gets a blemish. We're going to wait till ours gets a blemish. Okay, et cetera, et cetera. Which one does the Kohen get? So we saw in the Mishnah two opinions. First, the opinion of Rabbi Tarfon. Now the Gemara is going to try to understand Rabbi Tarfon and do so very quickly. Rabbi Tarfon Omer, a Kohen bar lo siyafa, the Kohen gets a nicer one. Now, why should that be? So I could say, just from a, you know, as a wonderful thought, he's a Kohen, give him the better one. Okay? In other words, let's, you know, treat him with the respect he deserves. He's a Kohen. But in other words, that's all really nice, but halachically, what's the argument that you're going to make that he gets a better one? So my time at the Rabbi Tarfon Kasavra, who would debar yanafik bereisha. So the Gemara has a really fascinating argument, and that is, do you know the healthier one came out first? Meaning it's a biological argument, the stronger one came out first. Right? I think about Yaakov and Esav having that wrestling match in terms of which came out first, and the stronger one came out first. Now, you understand, by the way, what I said is not a proof, it's not a source. You know, that's talking about human birth, and we're talking here about animal birth, and it's obviously different. But still, the point is that I forgot what I just said. Right? We left Rav Yosef Galili. Okay, Rabbi Tarfon is using this as, because there is such a natural phenomena that the strong one comes first, that creates a halachic precedent in which now we can safely assume that this one is the one that should be given to the Kohen. Now, mind you, by the way, it's not as simple as I'm presenting. Because if that were so accurate and true, so then shouldn't that be the determinant? So shouldn't that now have us candidly say, hey, that's the firstborn and the other one is not? So, in other words, it's enough of an argument to allow the Kohen to choose which one, even though when the fact remains, we still don't know which one is the firstborn.
Without relying on that, which one is the stronger coming first, but what about the concept of Ayin Tov, that when you're dealing with giving to a Kohen, you give the better one?
Right. Okay, that's also, it's a fantastic point. But the Gemara, it's really a mamonos issue, meaning it's a monetary discussion of...
Like Truma. Truma is also Ayin
Tov. I hear. But it's a monetary discussion of, in other words, if this is my money, this is my property. And so with my property, so possession is 10/10 of the law. Right? Chazakah. And so now the Kohen is coming and he's entitled to take one, but which one? And we don't know. And so now he's taking the better one, but that's my property. So what gives him the right to take the better one?
No, he doesn't have the right, but for us to...
No, I understand that, but again, that's wonderful. But the Gemara is speaking strictly from a halachic standpoint of chazakah. That's from the Gemara standpoint, that's really the entire issue. And Rabbi Tarfon's argument of the stronger one comes out first, you understand that the Gemara is making that as a halachic statement. In other words, in terms of allowing the Kohen to take the better one. Now, Rabbi Kiva Omer Mishamnim. Now, Rabbi Kiva says Mishamnim. Now, I already gave away what Rabbi Kiva meant. The Kohen gets the weaker one, the smaller one. You get to retain the better one. But that's not clear from the language of Rabbi Kiva, and the Gemara now is making exactly that point. Amar Rabbi Chia Bar Abba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kohen Oto Kechusha. Oh, so Rabbi Yochanan says the pshat that I said. And you know it's really the other way around. I said the pshat that Rabbi Yochanan says. Right? The Kohen gets the inferior one. Now, Amalei Rabbi Chia Bar Abba and the Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Chia says to Rabbi Yochanan, I don't understand. V'ha'anan mishamnin b'neihem tanan. Read the Mishnah. That's not what the Mishnah says. If the Mishnah meant that the Kohen's going to get the inferior one, so why doesn't the Mishnah say, hey, the Kohen gets the inferior one? That's not what the Mishnah says. The Mishnah says the Kohen gets the... Well, actually, the Mishnah says, we split the Shuman between them. It doesn't translate well into English. You split the fat between them. Well, even that by itself, what does that mean? But what Rabbi Chiya is just simply arguing to Rabbi Yochanan is, doesn't sound like you're right. So Amar Leh, so Rabbi Yochanan says, wait one second. Before you start questioning me, you should know, Ad achalta kafnayasa bebavel targimna misefa. Look, you're coming from Bavel. You know, in Bavel, you're eating your dates. You know, you had a nice life over there. Okay, and so good. So you luxuriated a little bit in Bavel. Meanwhile, here I am in Eretz Yisrael, and I'm knocking my brain on these Mishnahs and these Brisas, and I know the Pshat in these Mishnahs and Brisas. Now, obviously, it's a sharp remark, and, you know, it sounds a little bit, you know, testy, a little callous, in terms of how they converse with one another. And sometimes, what can I tell you? Meaning, sometimes they are sharp to one another. But Rav Yochanan's basic point is, I know the correct pshat, and I'm going to prove it to you. Diktani Seifa. Because consider what we learned in our very own Mishnah. Meisach and Mehem. So what if one of the animals dies prior to you giving it to the Kohen? So again, it was a twin birth. They came out simultaneously. We're holding up the Chachamim. We don't know which one came out first. So fine. So one goes to the Kohen, one retained by you. Fine. What if one of them died before I gave it to the Kohen? What then? Rabbi Tarfon Omer Yachloku. Rabbi Kiva Omer Amotzi Mechaveh Olav Araya. So we have a debate in the Mishnah, what exactly happens. Rabbi Tarfon says the remaining, the surviving one is divided. And according to Rabbi Kiva, Motzi Mechaveh Olav Araya. Now, think about this for a moment. Isak Adach Mesham Nebim, Dechiyadadi Pligi, Hachinami Lifligi Gabi Hadadi. So let's say for a moment now, Rabbi Yochanan says to Rabbi Chiya, you're right. That Misham Nebim means that we make some sort of compromise between them. If that's true, so then in the second case of the Mishnah, where one of them is dead, and there's only one remaining one, so shouldn't we now go halvesies on the one remaining one? And Rabbi Kiva says, no, you back off. Rabbi Kiva says, I'm not giving you the one remaining one. I don't know it's yours. So you see that according to Rabbi Akiva, clearly, he's not in this specific scenario, he's not in the spirit of compromise. Meaning, no, one died. We don't know which one it is. You now want to remove, you want to take the remaining one from me? Right? I have possession, and you have, at best, a claim, and a weak claim at that.
What can you argue that the survivor is a superior one by the fact that it's a survivor?
Good. Rabbi Kiva's not ready to argue that. Good. So, my elam my mishamnin shumam yehe b'nehem. Da'amar leila kohen aisi raya de'bechur hu v'shakel. So, Rabbi Yochanan says, therefore, I am correct. Mishamnin b'nehem means that, look, what's the difference between these two animals? Meaning, we don't know which one's the Bechor. What's the difference? Well, one's better than the other. Meaning, one is going to be of a better quality than the other. And so, according to Rabbi Yochanan's understanding of Rabbi Kiva, so now what the owner gets to say is, look, I'll retain the better one for myself. You want to make a claim against that? I'm right now the Muchzak. I'm the possessor. Hamotzi Mechaver Ol Avaraya. You don't know that this one belongs to you. The other one may belong to you. And now it's a question of removing from my possession, so we all know the rule. You need a... not just a claim, you need proof. You don't have it. Okay, good. So that's the pshat in Rabbi Kiva. Now we turn our attention to the next part of the Mishnah. Okay, now the next part of the Mishnah is as follows. So again, twins came out. They came out simultaneously. We hold like the Chachamim. We have Shalat Sam same. So issue number one, which we've already discussed, is which one does the Kohen choose? Meaning one's going to go to the Kohen, one's going to stay by you. Which one does the Kohen choose? Machlok is Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Tarfon says the Kohen gets the better one. And Rabbi Kiva says the Kohen gets the inferior one, and we just explained both sides of the Machlokas. Now we're up to the next part of the Mishnah, and that is the following. What about the one that you retain for yourself? Can the Kohen knock on your door, and you open the door and you say, and again, I'm just going to repeat the dialogue. Hi. I just walked away with one of the animals. He's like, yeah, I know. I gave it to you. Remember? Okay, good. All right, on the animal that you retain for yourself, so mazel tov, but can I have the Zor L'chai, the cave of that animal? And so the owner's like, really? But the Kohen's like, no, really. Because look, let's consider now your two possibilities. The two possibilities is that either the one that you retain for yourself is a Bechor, and so therefore I'm entitled to the whole thing, or it's not the Bechor, but then at the very least I get Zor L'chai, the cave. And he's right, and the Kohen's right. And so...
it's another Kohen.
Okay, that's true. So Rabbi Yossi in the Mishnah says, the Tanakhama of the Mishnah says, he's right, and you have to give him the Matanos. And Rav Yossi says, no, you're exempt from having to give the matanos. So, we're now up to this part of the Mishnah. Vashini Yishira Shisa V'chai V'matanos Rav Yossi Potter. My time under the Rebbe Meir. So the Tanakhama is Rebbe Meir. Okay, newsflash. Good. So I'm Rav Yochanan Hov V'koin Ba'alav Mishleit Sadim. So I already spelled it out, but the Gemara is saying it. So the Amar Lei B'chorhu Kulei Didihu V'ila B'chorhu Havli Matanos Minei. So again, Miman of Shach. This is the most classic Miman of Shach you got out there, which is, we'll cut it either way. Either it's the Bechor, I get the whole thing, or it's not the Bechor, and I get the Zolachai V'keva. In the very least, give me the Zolachai V'keva. V'rav Yossi, my time. And now, here gets trickier. Okay? Just, we'll pause for a moment. Rav Yossi says he does not have to give the Zolachai V'keva. Over to the Kohen. When you think it through, Rav Meir's argument is a really perfect argument. It really is true. Either it's the Bechor or it's not the Bechor. In either event, you owe me the Zor L'chai V'keva. Okay, yeah, you're right.
It's a Bechor.
You're right.
He has to give back the other one.
Right? So now, what is behind the Shita of Rabbi Yossi? So Rabbi Yossi, my time, Ma'amar Rava. Now, the wording of the Gemara is a little tricky. Asu Sheinu Zochek Zoche. The one who has not acquired is as if he's acquired. V'avagov de lo matali yadei. And even though it hasn't gone to his hands, Keman de matali yadei. It is as if it's gone to his hands. Vizavna li Yisrael b'mume, and sold to the Yisrael with its mum. Okay, clarification. Okay, I read the words. I even translated them, but now clarification. The way Rav Yossi views this transaction, it goes like this: we have now a birth of these twins. One of them is a bechor, one of them is not. We don't know. It's indeterminable. Good. One of them is going to be given over to the kohen. Good. According to Rav Yossi, here's what the halacha will do now. The one that is going to be given to the Kohen, even though we don't know which one is the Bechor, but one of them is going to be established, this is the one to the Kohen. The one given to the Kohen, it's Ki'ilu, it's as if it's already now in the possession of the Kohen. Okay. So if that's the one now that's given to the Kohen, what's the other animal now? That's going to be the exchange. Meaning, what happens is as follows. So the Kohen now has received, even though he hasn't actually received it yet, but the Halacha views it as if he has received his Bechor, and in exchange for that, he has now given over the other animal to the owner. Now, if this is the correct way to view it, so let's consider now. It's as if the Kohen now has received actually both of them, and now he's not entitled to keep both of them, because only one of them is a Bechor, so now he's giving one for the one that he's retaining. Now, if you're following everything I just said, so now what has just happened? The Kohen for a moment has had possession of both. We have learned already that when a Kohen has possession of an animal, so it is now pater from Zor L'chai V'keva. It's pater from Matanos. Mm-hmm. And so that means now that according to Rav Yossi, because I've received this from the Kohen, now you understand this is all a halachic mechanism. I received it from the Kohen. I've done no such thing. But still, halacha now views it as if I received it from the Kohen, and therefore it's pater from Zor L'chai V'keva. That is Rava's explanation of Rabbi Yossi. Now, Amar Rabbi Lazar, Akomodim B'Safik B'Chor Shein Chalipim B'Yad Kohen Shechayiv B'Matanos. So now the Gemara says, fine. What would be a scenario in which there's no Chalipin? Let's say, for example, that the let's say, for example, that there was only one surviving, or let's say, for example, it was male and female, like we learned back in the Mishnah. Fine. So now, I'm not going to give to the Kohen his Bechor. I'm going to have to for sure give the Matanos, right? To which the Gemara says, Hakomonim man Rav Yossi. So the Gemara says now, the Hakomonim is meaning a reference to Rav Yossi. In the scenario where I'm not giving the Bechor over to the Kohen, in the two examples that I just cited. So there, for sure, I'm going to have to give them matanos. Rav Yossi is in agreement. Rav Yossi, under the regular case, when I say regular, I mean it's a strange case, but in the regular case of there were two, and I gave them one, so the one I retained for myself, I don't have to give them matanos. But if there's only one, and I'm not giving anything to the Kohen, so then I got to give them the matanos. Rav Yossi agrees. Pshita, ad kan lo kapata Rav Yossi, asamal ad chalipim b'yad kohen dasu shenu zocha, ke zocha aval ein chalipim b'yad kohen lo. So the Gemara says, now at this point in time, like, of course. Meaning, the only thing that held back my matanos and my requirement to give them Matanos over to Kohen was based on the argument of this whole Chalipin argument. They really both went to the Kohen in exchange for keeping one, gives me back the other. So that means that both of them were under the possession of the Kohen, and that's why they're Patur from Zor L'Chayav Keva. But once I remove that entire construct, so then of course they have to give the Matanos over to the Kohen. To which the Gemara says, no, Ma'u detei matayim de Rav Yosi de Kasav de ima chayv elei ma'matana asi leili de gizav avoda. The Gemara says, well, you know, you really could have entertained an entirely different argument for Rav Yosi. Notably what? Notably the following argument. Do you know why Rav Yosi says that you are exempt from giving matanos? Because let's consider, what if I would have given matanos over to the Kohen? Then I would have thought the following. If I'm giving matanos of this animal to the Kohen, you know what this animal is? It's a regular animal. Oh. And so if it's a regular animal, so then I'll shear it and I'll work it. And maybe the whole basis of the Shita of Rav Yosi is so that people will not erroneously conclude that this is a chulin animal. It's not a chulin animal. It's a suffik b'chor. But if I start applying halachas of matanos, which are normally halachas for a normal animal, I would have thought this is a normal animal. Avagav dein chalipim yad kohen kamash malan. So the Gemara says that's what the argument I could have given for Rav Yosi, not the fancier argument of exchange. I get it. I'm really getting it from the Kohen, not giving it to the Kohen. Okay. Umi matzah samar hachi v'atini seifa. Now the Gemara says, now we know our Mishnayos, or better stated, we should know our Mishnayos, and we're going to learn in an upcoming Mishnah v'atini seifa shayi Rabbi Yosi Omer kol shechalipa b'yakon patam mina matanos v'rameir mechayev. So the Mishnah actually tells us the reason behind Rabbi Yosi. Why would have I entertained another explanation of Rav Yosi when it's the very Mishnah itself that's giving us the reason behind Rav Yosi? To which the Gemara says, chalipim biad kohen in, ein chalipim biad kohen lo. So how would we have made any other argument within Rav Yosi when it's the very Mishnah itself giving us the correct understanding of Rav Yosi? To which the Gemara says, as we are now on the top of Yud Ches Amud Beis, Ma'u Detema, Rav Yosi Ludvarav Derameir Kamerlei. So maybe this is Rav Yosi within the Shita of Rabbi Meir, which means as follows. Lididi Afilo Ein Chalipim Yad Kohen. Again, this is all a possible way to read the Mishnah. It's not the simple pshat, and it's actually not the accepted pshat. But at least we could read the Mishnah in the following manner. Rav Yosi says to Rav Meir, look, you want my opinion? My opinion is no matanos. Why? Because the imechavtele be matanos asile degiz of avoda, for the reason that we tried to argue earlier. Because once you give matanos from the animal, you think it's a chulin animal, you're going to treat it like a chulin animal, you're going to work it, you're going to shear it, etc., etc. But lididcha, but at least you, Remeir, can't you agree to me that odeli mi ahecha de chalib mi akon dasu shenazoche kazoche? And don't you agree with me, at least in the case of there were two animals, I give one to the Kohen, he really is accepting both of them, and then he's giving me back one in exchange for the one that he's keeping. And don't you agree with that argument? And Remeir's response is very simple. Amar le Remeir, no. And Remeir says, I don't agree with that argument. And so therefore, I think that matanos need to be given to the Kohen in such a circumstance. Okay. We did a great job in terms of catching up. We're almost all caught up. I'm going to stop over here. I need a nap. And in the meantime, however, let us just quickly recap. Okay, today we finished off the discussion in Yizayin Amud Aleph. We covered a lot today. We started with the discussion in Yizayin Amud Aleph, and we talked about adulterated wool. Okay, and various halachas regarding adulterated wool, and halachically it's not wool, and many different applications of that idea of adulterated wool. We started the Mishnah and the big topic for today of Efshel Etzamsei. Efshel Etzamsei, this idea of our ability or inability to determine determine equidistance, or for that matter, any scale of measurement, any mode of measurement, whether we have the ability to be precise in our measuring. And we can determine equality. And a machlokus between the Tanaim, Rav Yosi Aglili versus the Chachamim. Rav Yosi Aglili says, Efshel Etzamsei. And the Chachamim say, Efshel Etzamsei. Our big discussion for today, according to the Chachamim, is that even when there's human endeavor we're actively trying to measure, are we still hampered with our human limitations? And do we still say, Efshel Etzamsei? And the Gemara concluded very well that according to the Chachamim, Efshel Etzamsei, even if it's bidei adam. Right? The example that we kept rehashing again and again is the Egla Arufa and the linear measurement, which one of them is closer to the two cities. And it became clear at the end of the discussion, e efshel etzamsem. When you have an animal giving birth to twins, and the heads came out at the same time, and we subscribe to the Chachamim's position of e efshel etzamsem, so then what do we do now with the result? We know that only one of them is bechor, not both of them are bechor, and so what do I do? Questions like, which one do I give to the Kohen? I only give one to the Kohen. Which one do I give to the Kohen? Which one do I retain for himself? Machlok between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon says you give the better one to the Kohen. Rabbi Kiva says you give the inferior one to the Kohen. Questions of, the ones that I retain for myself, do I have to give matanos of that animal to the Kohen? Rabbi Yossi says yes, because mima nafshach. The Chachamim say yes, because mima nafshach. Rabbi Yossi says no. What's the reason behind Rabbi Yossi? So it's a complicated reason for Rabbi Yossi. It has to do with the fact that it's viewed as both of the animals going into the possession of the Kohen giving me back one in exchange for the one that he retains, and so therefore halachically it's viewed as if this animal went into the possession of the Kohen, therefore exempting it from Zor L'Chai V'Keva.